This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Trip.
Ready when you are.
Prepare for warp.
Course laid in, sir. Request permission to get underway.
Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me again this week is Tyler Johnson. Hello, Tyler.
Hi.
And joining us, we decided to bring in one more person this week because, you know, it's better when you're going to assimilate something to have more drones around. So we're joined from our Earl Grey show, our TNG show, Darren Moser. Welcome, Darren.
I go by 3 of 5 now, and I felt the call in the back of my head, and I just knew that someone was talking about the Borg somewhere, so I had to come over.
That makes sense. You know, I keep Darren in an alcove, and usually he's inactive, like I'm not even around. Suddenly he activated and walked over to the mic today. Tyler, what's your designation now? Darren is 3 of 5. Are you in the same little block with him?
I don't know. I just keep hearing a series of numbers in my earphones. Is that anything I should be worried about right now?
Oh, goodness. That sounds like the Borg Queen may be trying to contact you. All right. Well, today we're going to talk about the Borg on Enterprise. And so we thought it would be great to have a TNG perspective on this as well, especially since the Borg only appear on Enterprise one time in Regeneration. But, you know, a lot of fans were upset with some of the times that Enterprise went to the well for familiar aliens early on, because as a prequel series, and you're supposed to be charting new ground, and you're 200 years before the TNG era shows, you wouldn't really expect to see Ferengi, for example, showing up on the NX-01, but yet it happened. And I will say Brandon Braga has said that I don't know what we were thinking about the Ferengi episode. They did a good job with the Romulans of what we call here protecting that view screen moment by not letting us actually see the Romulans in Minefield, but the Borg we get to see. And I thought it worked pretty well. Personally, we'll find out what you guys think. How about really quick, Tyler, what just very initial thoughts on when you saw the Borg appear on Enterprise?
I thought it was cool. I mean, if anyone's upset at Enterprise, I think they're looking at the wrong series. It was First Contact that brought the Borg to the past. The Enterprise said, oh, well, they were there. We should, you know, maybe we can do something with this. So it's not really their fault.
Oh, a little zinger there at TNG, Darren.
Well, that's true. If we did open up a loophole wormhole right there that the writers were able to jump through, I go back and forth between feeling, like you said, it's one too many dips into the well, but also looking at the overall episode and how it's much more of a horror genre kind of stint. And I think it succeeds very well in that aspect. So I have to give it kudos for that.
Well, you know, Brandon is a big fan of horror. And so you see that through TNG, especially a lot of the episodes that he wrote. And Larry told us that Brandon became known around the writer's room as the weird shit guy because he would write things like Schisms, for example, these very unusual stories. But I think the love for a classic horror genre really comes through at the beginning of Regeneration with the whole sort of thing, story that's going on there.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that in terms of that balance between bringing in a new alien race. So if Enterprise had brought in a race you'd never heard of before, then the question would be, like, where are they in the future?
Right.
What happened to them?
Which
so I
has
feel like
happened
it's an,
on Enterprise.
It's an impossible situation to be in. you know, you can't go to the well too much and bring in alien races you already know, but you can't introduce a bunch of new ones that, you know, no one's ever heard of before because they would know them in the future.
Yeah. Well, before we get too far into the Borg on Enterprise, what are our thoughts on the Borg in general? So Darren, TNG introduced us to the Borg. Place the Borg just within the context of the Next Generation.
Well, I mean, what's also nice is we actually just discussed the Borg on Earl Grey, and not just the Borg themselves, but also First Contact Borg. And the Borg we see in Regeneration are First Contact Borg. They're much more, I mean, the budget is there. They're a little less wetsuit and a little more, you know, laser pointer. That's pretty much the two types of Borg.
But wetsuit and laser pointer.
That's pretty much it. It was either you had a full body wetsuit and you were, you know, covered in white makeup, or you have three laser pointers coming out of your eye, and you know you're. But they are a very scary villain, and you know Enterprise, they do a fairly good job though, because again, you realize early on, pretty much everyone's going to die because this information can't get out, you know, to infect the, you know, as what we know as the timeline. So that just adds to the, you know, the horror aspect of the genre. But the Borg, you know, this puts a little bit more bite back into them, as, you know, later on, well, by Enterprise time, we'd learned so much about the Borg that they were just, they kind of were slowly becoming just a desensitized villain.
I consider them a defanged villain.
Yeah.
After Voyager. But when you think of the Borg, Tyler, who do you think of first? Since, I mean, on the timeline, of course, the story we're talking about today comes first, but Enterprise comes last as a series. So like Aaron said, we have so much Borg leading up to this.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. It's funny. I think we heard defanged. We heard another version of the same thing, and I had that in my notes too. And just in terms of the, you know, this episode kind of gives them some fangs back in a way.
Yeah.
Because they were so unique and scary when they first showed up on TNG, and then they just got less and less and less scary as time went on. And then I think even for me, this is the first time I'd really thought back on it. I have this emotional memory of seeing them on TNG and going, oh my God, these guys are really scary. This is insane. And now the blocky effects are just a little bit less effective to me. It's not as scary. It, you know, it's that nightmare that I'm going to be taken over by something and that the human race is going to become, you know, part machine and we're going to lose our humanity. But it's also the nightmare you're just going to be really poorly designed. Like everything's going to be blocky and ugly and not elegant like an iPhone.
There is no Johnny Ive in the Borg Collective.
Right. If they're really going for perfection, it seems like they're kind of heading down a weird road with all of these, you know, sort of odd things that are added to their faces.
That's right. That's what Janeway should have asked the Borg Queen when she had the chance is, define for me perfection. What do you guys mean by perfection? Because this design you've got going on here, it's pretty bad.
Well, and two aspects, you know, I really enjoyed in the episode were, this was a new way of meeting the Borg, because when we meet the Borg in Next Gen, it's Q going, hey, look, here's an antagonist for you that you've never faced before. And I wouldn't let them, you know, take control of your ship. But in this one, you have a research, you know, a bunch of scientists, and they don't know what the species is. And they're like, wow, this is a cybernetic organism. And the two Borg they find, they're different species. So not only are, you know, they're like, oh, this isn't even just one species that looks like this. And it was just a different take on what if we were to learn about the Borg in a slow, almost time release manner. And then, you know, we pay for our, you know, naivete.
Well, the other thing that's interesting is both those scientists and Phlox at some point say, well, they don't look that scary. I think it's fine.
I know. It's like,
because they don't.
Like a machine gun for an arm, you know, saw for a hand.
Meh. It's not a machine gun. It's a little spinny thing. It's a pizza cutter.
Well, and that one scientist does say, like, he doesn't look exactly friendly. Are you sure we want to, you know, and he's the smart one, so you know he's going to be the first to die because
it's the classic moment. If you get the Enterprise Season 2 Blu-rays, there's a new commentary for this with John Billingsley and his wife, because she's one of the researchers at the beginning. And I love listening to her talk about shooting that opening scene and what they should have really been doing if they had something like that spread out on the table in front of them.
Is his wife, Bonita?
Yeah.
Oh, that's Frederick. His wife. Oh, I've been doing a rewatch of Chuck, and I recognize her immediately as General Beckman. And I'm like, oh, look, you are in another television show.
Yeah. And they are hilarious together. So definitely listen to that commentary.
The other thing we learned in this episode is the Borg can adapt to anything except for cold. If it's real cold, they're done.
You know, good thing space is really, really warm.
Right.
Yeah. That's right.
100 years in the ice, they couldn't adapt to that cold and figure out a way to get out of there.
Nope.
That's one thing Star Wars has over Star Trek. They have regular stormtroopers, snow stormtroopers, you know, right. Jungle stormtroopers. The Borg, they just have drones.
So I like to see adapting. Some Borg with the little white mask thing hanging down over their mouth to keep them warm, like the snowtroopers.
Snow Sherpas. Borg.
Apparently
Sherpas.
That's very effective. So as far as bringing the Borg onto Enterprise, you know, I think everyone agrees that the Ferengi made no sense to bring them on. Romulans made sense, but they kind of didn't go anywhere with it after that until it was too late, and then they started up. The Borg was a one-time thing. Like, now, if they had brought the Borg on Enterprise and we had run into them multiple times, I would have been screaming foul as well. Like, there's no way. This makes no sense at all. This one encounter, it's okay. It raises a lot of questions, which we'll get to later. Like, why doesn't Starfleet know anything about them in the future if they've had this encounter with them? But because of first contact, because of the fact that, yes, it makes sense that sphere exploded and somehow some drones ended up on Earth, and then they got frozen under the ice. It makes sense. I mean, I can buy it. And then they discover them, and it's okay. So I felt like this was a very legitimate thing to do, to bring them on.
Yeah, it is a plausible scenario. I mean, you can tell the writers actually, they weren't going to go into this with some backwater plot idea to just, oh, well, you know, Borg time travel all the time and they just happen to be here. It's like, no, it is, or they're going to try first contact again, except for this time they show up, you know, 200 years more into the future.
Right.
Yeah. I think if you just told me they were going to be on there during season one, I think I would have disliked it, but I liked the episode and I liked the way it was handled. I think it was smartly done. And so that really alleviates a lot of the concerns I would have had otherwise.
Right. Yeah. So they get on there, and I guess one thing to talk about quickly is the fact that you can't have Borg on Star Trek anywhere without them assimilating someone. So, of course, they start assimilate. They assimilate the researchers, and then they get on the Enterprise, and Phlox becomes infected with the nanoprobes, and it plays out a bit differently than what we're used to.
Yeah, this is probably the part that just bugged me the most, because especially how quickly it seemed that the Borg had assimilated the research team and that entire ship of aliens. I mean, the line they kind of give you is, oh, Phlox's physiology is, they're kind of having a little bit of difficulty with it. It's like, okay.
Always convenient, right?
Yeah. But, you know, he basically just gives himself like a radiation dose to kill all of them. And then he's pretty fine. Like, I don't know. I've seen every other time you've seen people assimilated like that, they are gone like in a matter of hours. Like, it is really, really fast. And, but you know, so that aspect of the assimilation on the Enterprise, rewatching this episode, you know, I had almost forgotten how deep they get into the ship. And I was like, wow, okay, well, if they get on the Enterprise is in big trouble, because Borg drones just, that's what they do, is they assimilate and take over, and they do it really quickly and they do it really efficiently. And that was one part of the assimilation process I really did enjoy, was we finally got to see you know, injecting the Borg, you know, tubules into the computer systems and it growing components that were starting to take over the ship. That part was really cool.
Yeah, it almost looked like magic, though. They just stuck out their little tubules and all of a sudden stuff grew like super fast. And then you see, you know, a minute later, there's Dr. Phlox and they put some nanoprobes or whatever they are on there. And it takes forever before anything happens. So, yeah, it was sort of a disconnect there. And I think also the one of the great things about this episode is it made the Borg tough again. You know, two Borg basically were who knows what was going to happen if they didn't stop them, right? They were growing. The ship was getting faster. It was adding weapons. All the stuff was happening. But one of the things that defanged the Borg over time was that people would become a Borg and they'd come back. Or they'd get over being assimilated in one way or another. And so that I felt like that was a mistake there to let someone almost get assimilated and get away because it kind of defanged them a little bit again.
Well, it became a thing like when someone needs to go on an intelligence gathering mission to a planet and they do a little bit of plastic surgery so that they look like the natives and they go down and they come back and then Dr. Crusher reverses it. It became like that, right? By the time you got to Voyager, it's like, well, we need to go to the Borg cube. So let's see, Janeway, Tuvok, B'Elanna.
Just
let's
beam just, on over, knock on the
we
door.
We will actually temporarily be assimilated, and then you can pull us out, and then we'll be back to normal again.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Although that's not what I think defanged the Borg most of all. So if we move into the next part here with First Contact, you know, I call this a First Contact pre-sequel because it's a sequel, but it's also a prequel if you start thinking about the time loop that's going on here. But I think First Contact was the first problem. Now, I love the movie, and I like the Borg Queen just fine as character, but just in terms of the writing and what you do with the Borg, I think First Contact is where the first problem occurred with the Borg Queen, because what I like about the Borg in this episode of Enterprise is that, as you've said, they feel like the Borg that we met on The Next Generation originally, where they are this overwhelming, mindless force that's just coming at you, and you cannot deal with them the way that you deal with Klingons or Romulans or anyone else. They are this zombie, space zombie force coming at you. And it's very scary because you really don't have any control. All you can really do is retreat. And when they decided to do First Contact, that doesn't work very well for a Star Trek movie on the screen. You know, you need to have a villain that you can talk to. And so they created the Borg Queen. But the problem is once you can actually talk to the Borg, that fundamentally changes what they are as a threat. And then Voyager took that to the extreme point to where, you know, Janeway starts actually negotiating with them and forms an agreement with them. They're going to work together and they're going to have like representatives on the Borg cube. And it just got ridiculous. And it got to the point to where the Borg were simply another ordinary alien race that was more powerful than most of the other ones, but you could actually treat them the way you would treat other alien races. And that's what I think ultimately defanged the Borg. And it, for me, started with First Contact, although Descent was not very good either, but at least that was a little like a renegade group there.
Yeah, I think, you know, with First Contact, like you're saying, that for the story, you did need an opposite to Data and Picard that they could physically fight against in a battle of words and discussion. But, you know, at the same time, she's surrounded by her legion of drones that are slowly consuming the Enterprise. So you still get the, you know, barreling, you know, horde of zombies that you cannot reason with them, you know, with the average drone. But yeah, with regeneration, like we've said, it does bring back a bit of that fear. But again, I think we're almost overusing the word defang, but the thing that kind of defangs it a bit.
Declawed, detubularized.
Detonailed, for Enterprise is because Enterprise itself is a prequel. And so, you know, well, they're not going to assimilate the Enterprise. You know, they're not going to kill a good portion of the crew, and thus it becomes something that every captain learns about in their manual for years to come, you know. And it's right. it's that prequel paradox where you're canon locked to things you can and cannot do. So it's, but you can still tell a very engaging story within that single episode. You just have to, you know, keep it contained. And I don't know if it was actually a nod to TNG's episode Conspiracy, but I mean, with the very end of the episode where, you know, they did send a signal, but it's going to take, you know, 200 years to reach the Delta Quadrant. I mean, the original Borg, or what would become the Borg, were those kind of insect creature aliens from Conspiracy and season one TNG. And they also sent a signal, you know, somewhere, and we didn't know, you know, where that was going, but by the time the Borg actually came to the screen, they had been changed, and now they were cybernetic instead of insectoid, because, you know, we couldn't really do good CGI insectoids till Enterprise, which was a couple, you know, decades later. But so I don't know if that part of the story was a nod to the original origins of the Borg as a character. Yeah. If not, it does kind of fit that way.
I didn't take it that way. I took it to, that's why I also see this as a prequel to First Contact. I see that as them sending the signal that could have brought them to Earth in the first place, so that these same drones could end up in the ice. So it's like that causality loop.
Oh.
You know,
that's how I've always
done. One of the fun things to think about that is there's supposed to be these temporal agents in Enterprise, right, in other series, that are going around cleaning stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
But they say, we can't clean this up, because if we clean this up, then it's going to ruin a bunch of other stuff. So we have to let this happen, and it'll play out, and it's all fine. We'll just make sure no one hears about it later. That's the trick.
Well, it makes me actually wonder now, the Borg cube that shows up in A Best of Both Worlds, which is the first time we have a Borg in Sector, you know, 001 on Earth, did that Borg cube come because of this signal, or did it come because of Q's encounter? I mean,
good
question. It could have been closer. They literally could have received this signal and already been heading our way, and Bohr, and then Q's one was just superfluous in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
We'll never know.
It's hard to reconcile, because, you know, the implication in Q, who Guinan tells them that, well, now they know you're here, and so they'll be coming. But, you know, this is one of those cases where when you write this stuff for two decades, and now if you go back and you try to reconcile it, sometimes you really can't. But it is an interesting thing to think about that, yeah, maybe, I've never thought about that before. Maybe that cube was making its way. I always took it as a random cube that just happened to be the one that Q threw them in front of. But maybe it got the signal and it was already on its way.
I want to know is, where is the giant dotted line between the alpha and the delta, or the beta and the delta quadrant? You know, because they say the delta quadrant. Well, that could be really, really far away, or actually not quite that far away.
No. You've got to watch the, they take the ESPN technology into the future, and then if you're watching it, you see the yellow line, so you know exactly
the
where.
The starships can see it. That makes sense.
Yeah, starships, they can flip it on, and they can actually see the line. Yeah.
It's like driving into a city, right? You're driving in, you're like, well, now I'm technically in the city, but it's going to be another half hour before I get where I need to go, if not longer, right?
Right.
So it's like, well, I mean, I've crossed the line, but this could still be 2 years before I get anyplace important.
Well, I always felt a little weird in the fact that technically the alpha beta line goes straight through Sol. So I'm like, where's the beta quadrant love? Like, everyone's talking about the safety of the alpha quadrant, defending the alpha quadrant. I mean, basically, Jupiter's in the beta quadrant half of its year. So, but we don't care about it then.
Yeah, I've had some of those alpha beta debates, especially when it comes to the Dominion War, because they call them the alpha quadrant powers.
Every time you say it, I just think of Revenge of the Nerds. The alpha betas. Nerds!
That's what the Klingons are thinking about the humans. Yeah.
Alpha beta, we care not.
Well, the Klingons could have chopped up the galaxy, you know, and used their own terms. And they're like, why do you keep, you know, dividing it in perfectly four, you know, perfect? We like triangles, okay? Everything is chopped up into several small triangles. like our displays, like our galaxies, everything.
And the Romulans, they just have one sector. It's the Romulan sector. Yeah. It's the Empire.
There's us and everything else.
Right.
Concentric circles.
Do you wish that Enterprise had picked up the terminology from the original series where, like, every little area of space where you are is a quadrant?
Oh, Lord.
We're the only ship in the quadrant. Yes. All right.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's just a show coming into its own. Just like any episode or any show you watch, like, the first season, and you hear those little things that the actors say that you know, yeah, like, a season 7 actor would never say because it just doesn't flow. And, you know, yeah, that stuff, you just kind of, you give it to them.
Of course. Well, so any more thoughts on the first contact sequel prequel connection before we talk about some of the TNG connection details?
I did like just how they were describing the sphere in the very, very beginning. Like, obviously, if you know Star Trek, you know who these guys are immediately. It's not, you know, it's not the big reveal, but the little tiny hints of like, oh, you know, every piece of structure we've discovered has the same curvature. I think this was a sphere, and your inner nerd's going, oh my gosh, it's a sphere. I know who those guys are. But you know, I think for first contact, like I said, I think it was a really good idea for the episode. Whether we can debate on if it was executed right or if it even should have been made, like, the idea is sound. Like, it's not going to be thrown out the airlock because, well, you can't possibly just have the Borg show up. It's like, well, I give you first contact.
Yeah, the big issues with it, you could pick some of the stuff apart if you want to, but it's the same way you can pick anything apart that has time travel, and you can find a way where it works or it doesn't work. And so I think for the most part it works. I think it you know, they obviously spent some time and thought making sure that it worked to the best of their ability. But the thing I liked about it, even like with the Phlox assimilation piece, that was a character thing that happened. And so seeing his character go through it, even if it was a little bit odd as a story piece, was kind of interesting. And so I think the sort of the whole episode to me sort of feels that same thing. Like, okay, I could see how you could maybe do some things different, but it's interesting that you remembered that this sphere crashed and you said, oh, maybe there's a story there. Let's talk about that. I like that.
That's true. And with Phlox's assimilation, they took it less as a let's watch him be assimilated and more of how would this character react and how would the characters around him react when you have a friend who's basically terminally ill and there's really no, I mean, yes, he, you know, MacGyver / McCoy's or whatever you want to call it, his way into a cure. But, you know, they have some great scenes where, you know, like Hoshi comes and talks with him and you can tell, like, you know, they're worried that he's not going to recover from this, these persistent little nanoprobes.
Well, that was a good job of them also using character relationships appropriately, because it calls back to the beginning of the series where Phlox is really helping Hoshi along as she's, you know, really uncomfortable with what's happening with her experience as being in space. And here it's reversed, you know, I mean, she's paying that back with her concern for Phlox. And I think he's a little, you know, surprised that she's not more frightened to be around him. But,
you know, if they would have gone another way, it would have been nice to see all of the animals in sick bay assimilated. I think that would have been a fun scene.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Yeah.
Not his albino bat. No.
The bat's got like a little eyepiece on and it's flapping around and its wings are sort of mechanized now. Yeah.
That was one thing with the Borg. The Borg are supposedly, I mean, every Borg is supposed to be slightly different and stuff, but everyone has an eye. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, it almost feels like there shouldn't be that consistent. Like there should be, I mean, the Queen doesn't have an eyepiece, but I'm thinking there should be more Borg that don't have the one patch. Like, I feel that would feel more variety to me if that's how we saw our Borg.
Maybe there's something about the assimilation process that it has to actually use an eyeball as like a power source for the assimilation or something. And so every Borg loses an eye and has to put a little eyepiece on it.
That could be, yeah. Or it's just a it's such a way into the mind. I mean, so much of what we process. I mean, yeah, you can jack in, you know, anywhere, but through the eye is the highway into the mind.
I can just see them shoving like a big tube right into the eye.
Well, we saw that in First Contact with the, you know, little tiny drill, and right as it starts to hit the iris and it indents it a tiny bit, he wakes up.
Good point. Well, other TNG connections here when the Ferengi came on Enterprise, and you think, well, why didn't Starfleet know more about the Ferengi? Because at the beginning of the Next Generation, the Ferengi are still sort of this mysterious race. You feel like Starfleet knows some about them, but it's more like through legends as opposed to actual interaction with the Ferengi. But when they come on Enterprise, the way it's handled is such that that could have happened and there would be no record of it, and then they really don't know anything about them. But these Borg, part of this takes place at the research station. You know that that scientists are going to go up there to find out what happened, so they're going to uncover more stuff there. You know that Archer is going to record logs about what happened, and it just how is it that they know absolutely nothing about this, and Picard and his crew are so surprised when they encounter them the very first time? I mean, forgetting that, they're written in different time periods, yes. Just keeping it in universe. I mean, what kind of explanation would you come up with?
Well, it's a little tricky just because of how much better record keeping is done in the future, but you can almost draw a parallel to an incident happening, you know, around the founding of America over 200 years ago that affected one ship out on the ocean, and a captain on a vessel nowadays supposed to know that. Like, I mean, we keep hearing about the Starfleet database. Oh, they downloaded our database. Oh, we took a copy of our database with us. And it's like, but how much does the database really have? Like, I mean, even with future compression and even with all that, I can't imagine that in Picard's time in the 24th century, they would have, I mean, they would obviously have to dial back to the home internet or whatever to call up new stuff. But, you know, no ship has every single log from every single mission. And, you know, there were many things that would happen to the Enterprise NX-01, like the Zindi arc and all of that, that would seem vastly more important to know about than the one, you know, space zombie encounter that they have, where they're two people on the ship, and one of their medical officer gets infected for a little bit, and then it goes away. So I guess that would just be the first place I would go would just be time. It's just, you do look at 200 years, no matter what, that is a long time to keep something when you have no reason to access it for that long.
I see what you're saying, and I like it. I think there's, first of all, I think they would have all the records that they could ever possibly have. I mean, there's formula about processor speeds are going to go up by this amount, and power consumption is going to go down, and storage is going to go up. And it's been pretty true. But there's a different problem that comes up there. There's so much data. Who's going to read it all? You know, you get on your future Google, whatever that is, your Star Trek Google, and say, guys with eyepieces, nothing's coming up. Gray guys, still nothing. Yeah. Wetsuits, right? Like,
what search criteria guys, do you put in?
Pulls it up, and you're like, oh my gosh, what are these pictures? This isn't what I was looking for.
Exactly. Oh, got it. I was looking for the Borg, and I spent 8 hours looking at these wetsuit guys. I don't know what I was doing. Interesting history, though, here. Let me tell you about that, Captain.
Yeah. See, my thought is that in the 22nd century, they were still using Evernote. And then at some point, Evernote got shut down. They couldn't get the data out of it. And so all these records have been lost.
That could be. No, they couldn't make the conversion to isolinear. I mean, they probably lost a lot converting from isolinear to bioneural gel, I'm sure, when that, you know, update rolled around. So
I think you guys have hit on something. There's just something happened in history where they lost a bunch of records. The Romulans came in with a ray and just erased all the hard drives. And the-
a giant magnet ship. That's all it was.
They're towing it behind a warbird with a tractor beam. They spin around. They just rake it across the Starfleet master computer in San Francisco, erased all the hard drives. Yeah.
Well, you know, Starfleet, they love keeping, you know, remote outposts that happen to be key data centers for, like, the backbone of the Federation. So, you know, yeah. It's, of course, it's Station 47, and the giant magnet attacks that, and that's what happens.
Yeah. But seriously, what you said, Darren, it makes sense. I think that would be a logical conclusion, that just it was one incident, and over time it, and maybe it wasn't completely forgotten by everyone, but it seems like the type of thing that might become like a legend over the course of 200 years. Like it really happened, but everyone thinks it's just a story now, and then they don't really put that much stock into it, and so it's not really in the database per se. It's a story that your grandfather will tell you.
Well, and especially with what we know of human nature, I mean, again, I think the Zindi arc is that's what mostly gave me the idea, because that happens, what, 2 years later is the Zindi arc, and it's like, do we remember as much of the bad things that happened in 1999 versus 2001? I mean, here in America. I mean, it's just, yes, when you're storing stuff in data, it doesn't make that distinction. But as humans, we tend to focus on the spikes, the hot points of history.
Well, here's the other thing, too. So
right.
we're talking about the Borg, and they didn't even know their name, obviously. But there were also the sphere builders, whatever they are. So that was a big mystery that it was going to be in the log somewhere. And then there was the weird Tinkerbell aliens that take over your body, right? They're in there, and we didn't know whatever happened to them. So... But by the time Archer's completed his career, he probably has 500 weird alien races he saw once. And how do you know which ones is going to be important in 100 years and which one's going to be forgotten?
They didn't have really good tagging back then. So a lot of the articles just got lost. And you like you said, it's hard to do a root search query when nothing gets tagged. I blame Trip. He was supposed to tag those.
I think they need better exit interviews after alien encounters so they can find out more about them, what their plans might be for the future, so they can plan better.
The only thing they do is they seem to catalog their energy signatures very well, because it's like, oh yeah, that was shot from this disruptor from this random species that they use to charge their service vehicles, not their lead warships. It's like, how do you know that? But, you know, it moves the story along, so...
Yeah, it does. Another question I have is whether or not Picard should have cleaned the debris up in the Arctic before zipping off at the end of First Contact. Because, now I'm not saying that he knew it was there and he left it on purpose, but maybe he should have checked a little more closely when you knew that it's quite possible that some Borg had beamed down to Earth.
So Kirk only leaves, you know, a cell phone or a tricorder behind. Picard leaves a whole Borg sphere remnant,
yeah,
you know,
some
behind.
Drones, yeah.
I can just see him. He's flying home. He's like, I know I'm forgetting something. So my keys? No, I got those. I just can't think what it is.
Where is Ensign Lynch's body?
I would give him the benefit of the doubt, mostly because with the Vulcans having arrived, you want to just get out of there as fast as possible, because if the Vulcans see you, like, that's going to mess up the timeline way more than some Borg fragments. But also, I mean, my bigger question is, how do they go back to the future when they've ejected half of their deflector dish into space? That is the real mystery. But no, I give them the benefit of the doubt just because of the time. It's like they need to... You know, they hide behind the moon or, you know, Earth's magnetic field or something like that, and have to zip away for where the Vulcans can't see. But
not to mention in the movie, right? Oh, here's what we'll do. The movie's pretty much over. It was 2.5 hours long, but let's put another 15 minutes of cleaning up the Borg in there right at the end.
Right. Right. That's true. It's like, oh, let's start beaming this up, you know, piece by piece. And
well, what if they made a movie from this episode, Regeneration, and then at that point you could have cameos again from TNG where they come in and they do try to clean everything up before the researchers find it, but they can't quite make it, and so then things can go on forward there. That's a little crossover.
It's funny because you said Back to the Future, Darren, and I was just imagining like the Picard sends himself a letter to the future, like Doc Brown. And the guy comes in out of the rain.
It's really, really old.
Right. I was told you were going to be here on this date. I'm supposed to deliver this to you.
On this star date. It's got a lot of decimal points to be really
specific.
It's
still dated in old date, but for some reason star dates are on there too. Yeah, that.
Then you open it up and there's a piece of hair inside just to make him feel bad.
Oh, God. So I know your hair is long gone, but here's what it used to look like.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's an interesting question to me within the context of this Enterprise episode, just because if Picard had not left debris behind on Earth, then this whole story on Enterprise would not have happened in the first place.
That's why he did it.
He knew that writers needed something to pull out of their box.
Oh, he had to do it to protect time. Maybe he cleaned it up, and then the future Federation time cops made him go back and put it back to set the timeline back in order.
That's true. Well, I did like your theory, though, like you said, about that this signal somehow triggers... You know, I mean, heck, for all we know, I mean, we know the Borg talk to each other, but you have splinter groups, and it's not outside the realm of possibility that this signal is what sent the cube that fights in, you know, first contact, and it has to go back to create its own future. Like, you know, I mean, we all assume that all the Borg cubes are connected, and as far as we know, they are, but there are, you know, we do see one, you know, one that's... When Q sends it to one that shows up, you know, in Best of Both Worlds, and then one in First Contact. So, I mean, as far as we know, they could all come from different sources. Not all one big happy collective, we're led to believe.
I thought it was pretty clear they were sending it out, and that was supposed to be why the Borg started. You know, maybe they were going to turn left and they turned right.
Well, yes.
You know, so I think that was definitely on purpose.
They're like, yummy planet, chomp, chomp. Oh, over here.
Yeah. Well, one more thing that I just want to bring up because we're talking about this, and this episode is the reason that some fans have this view. There is a school of thought out there that because of First Contact and this episode, that it's proof that Enterprise, and it would also, if you go back in the timeline, I think it would be most of Voyager, a lot of Voyager as well, all take place in an alternate timeline from TOS and TNG and most of DS9 as well, because this changed history and it caused the universe to split, and then there's two different timelines. Have you ever thought about that? What do you think about it?
I have never thought about that at all. I've heard it, but I just went, well, okay, if you want it to be that way, that's fine.
If it makes it more interesting for you, right?
So basically from the moment in First Contact in the Prime Universe going forward, that's now a splinter as far as what we view from First Contact, because it, I don't know, it's hard. Time travel's hard to figure out.
I mean, I think that would be it. And the reason is that these drones get left behind in the ice, and then they're found in the past, and then they wouldn't have been there before. And so that discovery didn't actually happen until the incursion in First Contact. And then so from that point, things change.
Here's a thought.
Very confusing.
This episode only takes place in that alternate universe.
Ah,
because we've had
point.
Singular episodes that take place in alternate universes, a la In A Mirror Darkly 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So this, but I see what you're saying. It's the causality loop of the Borg never went back in time, we'd never have this episode. And it's time travel. So it always messes things up.
But that's a really interesting point. I've never thought about that before either, that like, what if this particular episode is just us seeing the events in the universe that split at that point and the Borg did get left behind, and they didn't actually get left behind in First Contact, in which case the writers have some splaining to do, because their justification for this episode may not exist.
Well, I think it was more of that we're normally in the in the universe where First Contact wasn't affected, you know, by the movie. The movie events didn't occur, the time travel and whatnot, and so no Borg were left behind. But this episode is that splinter where First Contact did happen,
right?
And they get left behind. But then you also draw into Voyager, where Seven of Nine makes that one-off remark of the Borg were present during those events of First Contact. So now she's in that universe. She just showed her
hand. I think this is the first step into the JJ-verse. So, I think First Contact happened, and then this happened, and then the JJ-verse happened. And then lens flare everywhere.
Interesting. Because in the Abramsverse comics, when they show, sometimes they have like characters will be thinking about the past and they'll show ships from the past and all. The NX-01 looks exactly like the NX-01 Enterprise. It's like nothing different about it.
They didn't want to Apple store it up.
Well, they don't show the inside, but the exterior, you know, whereas some of the other ships like the Nacelle design's a bit different in the Abramsverse and all. So it feels like everything was the same up until, you know, that point. Of course, they're leading you to the whole Nero incursion thing, but that doesn't actually really apply because, you know, the design of these ships in the Abramsverse was already what it was before Nero came through, which was already different. So
true. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just us talking in circles of between the real world where Star Trek is fiction and the Star Trek world where it's everything.
Well, sometimes I can't sleep at night.
You mean there is a world where it's not real?
Yeah, sometimes.
No, it's totally real. I knew it.
Sometimes I can't sleep at night and then I think, oh, is an alternate universe, and I sleep like a baby.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is probably the geekiest Warp 5 we've ever done. Anyway, we get into these nuts and these debates over, you know, like the internal consistencies within the show, which is something we don't tend to talk about all that much on Trek and Film, really. But it's very interesting anyway, especially one like this that can really make your head spin. Do you guys have any last thoughts on the Borg on Enterprise?
I think it's all been said. No, it was a tastefully done one-off episode, and because of that, the writers got away with the fans, you know, lynching them, because we love our canon, and don't you dare mess with when species showed up, because that's one of the things, you know, we see as constants. But no, it's a lot of really fun stuff, you know, has been debated. I really like a lot of the time travel type stuff we've been talking about, especially with First Contact, that, you know, I'd never considered. And that's what's best about Star Trek and science fiction in general, is the details do matter. And that's what lets us have these discussions, because, you know, it's just all these fun mental exercises of, whoa, what about this? Or, oh, could they be part of this universe? And, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a fun conversation. So thank you, Enterprise, for bringing the Borg back, because it let us have this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, there's something deep going on here, even if they don't always get it right. I think that, you know, somebody put a lot of thought and time into this in terms of trying to work out a way to make all this happen and make it all make sense in the universe. And I don't know. I think that's fun. I think that's admirable. And it's fun to think about later, too, because you can go down that well all day if you really want to.
And Darren said the details do matter, which means this is not whose Trek is it anyway.
The only detail that really bugged me in that episode was, the mass of the ship has increased by 13%. I'm like, mass can't increase. What are you talking about? They had to assimilate something. You can't just generate mass. But, you know.
One of the drafts of the episode that might have been an artifact, because they were originally supposed to just keep finding ships and then pulling them into their ship and making it bigger and then getting to another ship and taking over parts of that as well.
That's true. So maybe we just missed them, you know.
That's where, absorbing, you know, ownership. That happens in episodes where there's something that made sense in the original script, but after editing and things get trimmed out and like something gets left over and you're like, huh?
That's true.
And
that's true.
I literally read that today. I had the exact same reaction when they said that. No!
Newton's third law of conservation of mass and principles. But no, it's,
well, maybe they can assimilate dead space and turn it into a whole plating.
It's true. I mean, the Bazaard collectors do absorb, you know, stray matter and things and recycle it into part of the propulsion mm-hmm. system. Oh, that's probably the nerdiest things I've said this whole month. But
that's why Borg cubes are black, because they're all made of dark matter.
Is it the soot of space?
Yeah.
Maybe they just got hungry. You know, Dr. Phlox said he didn't want to eat because it would speed up his regression. So maybe they just stopped off for snacks and just were eating the whole way.
I think that was a nod to Gremlins in the script.
Maybe they came across a comet and just, you know, chomped on it. But I did like, you know, we didn't really touch on it, but I did like the ship and how it got assimilated and it was changing and it wasn't, you know, symmetrical anymore or balanced. You know, it actually, it was like a virus, you know, taking over this ship, and it looked really cool. You could tell they had a lot of fun, you know, with the progression of the assimilation of the mm-hmm. ship, because we weren't going to see the Enterprise assimilated. So we at least have to see something get assimilated, you know, like that.
Right. That episode is just not complete unless something gets assimilated. Come on, please.
I mean, come on, guys. It's like, I mean, can you imagine very first, you know, Q Who Borg, we're just interested in your technology. And since your technology is, you know, basically our past, we're just going to leave you guys alone and just go home. You know, that would basically right. be what they would do.
The Q Who Borg were like engineers from Samsung. They just beamed over to check out your technology so that they could then go and duplicate it.
We need to reverse engineer this and come out with a competing product. So, an antimatter reactor. Oh, yeah. Let's scan that. That looks... He was just browsing, and then Worf told that other security guy to take him down. I mean, that's so rude. But I think we're digressing from
I think so.
Enterprise just, all right, well, just a tad.
Well, it's been really fun talking about the Borg with you guys today, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Hal Sutherland and the Animated Series.
I don't like the animated series. It's not good. However...
See, that's the kind of stuff that makes me forget about it. Would you rather me watch Deep Space Nine or the animated series?
Okay, but now that you're
we
done...
We made that choice.
Now that you're done with Deep Space Nine, you can move on to the animated series.
Earl Grey.
TNG Reboot.
I have a lot of problems with this concept of let's just do the next generation. I don't think it's possible. To me, a big part of Star Trek is like this aspect of exploration and finding out the unknown and going out places we've never been.
The Ready Room.
The Wire.
He's basically becoming a good Federation citizen, and that's causing a huge amount of conflict. And maybe even before he was here, that's what got him here, is that his inner ideals made him a bad Cardassian.
The Orb.
Esri Dax.
Which to me, she really seems like, you know, that boy or girl now who's gotten out of college, is living at home again, and not really sure what they want to do with their life because nothing's turning out the way they thought it was going to. Which is funny because her character is actually more relevant now than it was then.
To the journey!
Voyager Season 3 Marathon.
Being a child of the 90s, and I hadn't watched this in a while, I realized, oh my gosh, how things had changed and how things hadn't changed. Rainn Robbins' gigantic cell phone with the huge antenna and her hippie van, the lava lamp. I mean, I just loved it all. It was very groovy.
Warp 5.
Enterprise Season 5.
Well, they could find, I mean, more excitement in the decon chamber with this whole trip Trantipole love triangle thing for sure.
Yeah, an Andorian fight scene in the decon chamber. Think about it.
Wow.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Hewitt Wolf, Andromeda.
I suppose the easiest way to describe them would be a bat, who lead living hosts for their young.
They're kind of like I'm going to say xenomorphs in Alien, even though Max would kill me for saying that.
Yes, and I dare say he will when he listens.
Literary Treks.
Protectors with Kirsten Beyer.
Again, it's just you look at realistically as you possibly can. You know, coming that close to death, being in the continuum, I mean, what's that going to do to someone? And I struggled for a long time figuring out how to have her, again, realistically work through all of those things.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows, and you'll find them in a variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, or Zune, or you can download or stream from the website. So go grab some shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. All right, Tyler, you know, last time we did our season five, you know, show, what things we would like to see in season five of Enterprise. And we got some feedback from Mickey Kitt. What did Mickey say?
Yeah, this is really exciting. First of all, thanks, Mickey, for responding. I specifically asked for other ideas and you brought it, which is awesome. So here's what Mickey said. He said, I just finished watching Enterprise and then parentheses for the first time. And there's no exclamation points, Mickey. This is my only quibble. There should be like four exclamation points there. But that's fine. I just finished watching Enterprise for the first time last night. I am so ready for a fifth season. Excising These Are the Voyages and ending the season on Terra Prime would have set up a myriad of challenges for NX-01. The problem of xenophobia would not simply evaporate. As stated in this episode, the Federation cannot be easily won. So following through with the racism of Terra Prime would be logical. Any threats as massive as RoboCops, and we talked about this, we think he means Peter Weller, would feel like a duplicate. So maybe reintegrating former Terra Primers into the into Federation-style life would be a hum through the season. A new racist crewman being forced to fit in, a politician threatening to cut funding to the fleet, etc. One thing that I would like to see in Enterprise fifth season would have been more one-off adventures. The TOS world building became a little suffocating in season four. The characters and world of Enterprise were strong enough at that point to be its own show. The only bit of TOS I would have liked to see explained would be the transition from our economic system to the apparently moneyless future of Kirk. And then his last idea was a three-parter where some Zindi want in the Federations, but others don't. So, drama. So thanks so much, Mickey. I think those are really great ideas. I really like the idea of the Terra Prime colony being reintegrated. I think that's a fun one.
Yeah, I like that. It just would show all those ideas would show, you know, the hard path to getting to the future that we see in the Federation, which is what I want to see too. The money one's interesting because I still don't buy into the idea that there's no money in the future in Star Trek. I think maybe Starfleet doesn't use it, but we've had this discussion many times. I think there's money, and it just sounded good to say there isn't any. And Picard's line to Lily, I mean, that worked really well in the movie, so I'll go for it. But come on, there's got to be some money out there. Just ask Quark. He's got plenty of money for you. All right. So thanks again, yeah, for that feedback, Mickey. And for everyone else, if you'd like to share your thoughts with us, you can do that by going to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about Enterprise or anything about Star Trek that you want to discuss. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek under username trekfm. Now, speaking of places to find us, Darren, we don't have guests from other hosts from the network on Warp 5 very often, but tell everyone where they can find you, because you're doing a lot of other stuff on Trek FM and all around.
All around, yes. I do enjoy a good dose of sci-fi. So you can listen to me and my two co-hosts over on Earl Grey, which is our TNG series show. And we just have a lot of fun. We rotate through some great topics, and like I've said many times before, when you find some people that you can have a really good discussion about Trek with, you just hold on to that. And so we're having a really fun ride. But you can also tweet with me directly. I'm available under Dr. Sci-Fi on Twitter, which is DrSCIFI. But also, if you want even more science fiction, I have my own podcast called The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, where each month I go through a different topic from novels to robots, ships, and things of that nature. So, I definitely have the sci-fi gene in me, for sure.
Excellent. And Tyler, where can everyone find you these days? We talk about your Twitter experiment every week.
Yeah, we'll just leave that one alone for now. But yeah, you can reach me at Twitter at Flintastic. That's FLYNTTASTIC. I think I can now say that you'll hear me on some other shows on Trek FM. I've been on here enough. I can probably claim you'll hear me again somewhere, probably on Warp 5, but maybe on some of the Ready Rooms and some of the other shows as well. Or you can just walk down the street and look for somebody who seems like they'd love Andorians, and that's probably me.
That's right. Well, in fact, we're recording a new Ready Room in a couple of days on Sunday, and it's Enterprise Week. We're going to be talking about damage, and Tyler, you're going to be on there with us. So next week, everyone can check out an Enterprise Ready Room as well. If you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter also. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, besides the Ready Room, which we just mentioned, I do two shows with Matthew Rushing. We do The Orb, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine, and also Literary Treks, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics, and we interview authors. And then you'll also find me on my interview show, Matter Stream. So check all of those out if you're interested. We'd also like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, and that's Audible.com. Audible helps us bring Warp 5 to you every week. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks. They have more than 150,000 books for you to choose from right now, and they're adding new stuff every week. It's amazing how much stuff they add. And, you know, new books come out. These days, there's usually an audio version as well, so you can get that there. Also, classics, other bestsellers, science books, business, lots of Star Trek books, whatever you're looking for, they have it at Audible. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. If you go to audibletrial.com/trekfm, you can get that trial. Choose whatever book you want. And then at the end of the trial, if you decide not to stick with Audible, you get to keep that audiobook. That's yours. So nothing to lose. But if you're listening to podcasts, I know you're going to love audiobooks. You're going to love Audible. So go check it out, audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we really thank Audible for helping us bring the show to you.
We also wanted to invite you to check out Andrew Allen's album, Smooth Federation. If you like the jazz cover Where My Heart Will Take Me on Warp 5, you'll find that plus 9 other jazz renditions of music from across Star Trek. So pick up the album in iTunes or Amazon. Great stuff there by Andrew. And, you know, some of us like his version better than the version that was actually on
Enterprise.
But we're not going to talk too much more about that. We've talked about that plenty.
That's right. We got to get Russell Watson on the show sometime and have him sing Where My Heart Will Take Me. We should get him on, and we'll get Sting on with him, and then they'll do a jazz version. Because Sting loves to do jazz covers, you know. I'm sure that Sting would be happy to come on Warp 5, right?
Yeah, that's all. He's just sitting around waiting for that call.
Just waiting, yeah. That's right, yeah. All right. Well, there's another way you can help us keep Warp 5 coming to you every week. If you'd like, you can go over and make a donation to the network. Now, our shows are free for you to download, but they're not free for us to produce. We have to pay for the cost of production and storage and bandwidth to deliver everything out to you. And we have, as a thank you for your contributions, we have original Alien illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see over on our website. And we have different contribution levels for you to choose from. And we have the aliens available as both badges and art prints. And you can mix and match and choose which ones you want in which format. So just go over to trek.fm/donate and check those out. And we really thank you for helping us keep the network going. All right, Darren. Well, thanks so much for joining us today on Warp 5. And I'll forgive you for not bringing enough Earl Grey for us all. But you looked like you were really happy sipping yours there.
Oh, yes. Well, actually, here, I have an isolinear chip, and I can just upload the recipe. It's my grandmother's, and then you can replicate your own. So,
okay. That sounds good. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening, and join us again next week here in the Decon Chamber for another episode of Warp 5.
Thanks, everybody.
Live long and prosper.